Well, good morning and a very warm welcome to this time of worship, the time when we acknowledge the worth of ourselves, of one another, and of all creation. Welcome all of you here, and also a welcome to those who'll be listening to the podcast later on. We begin by lighting our chalice candle, the symbol of our worldwide Unitarian and Unitarian Universalist community. In the mystery of life about us, there is light. It gives us a place to be, to grow, to rejoice together. It opens the pathway to love. In this place of friendship, there is freedom. Let the light we kindle go before us, strong in hope, wide in goodwill, inviting the day to come. And some opening words from Erica Hewitt. As we enter into worship, put away the pressures of the world, the pressures that ask us to perform, to take up masks, to put on brave fronts. Silence the voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love contained within these walls. You do not have to be braver, smarter, stronger, better than you are at this moment to belong here with us. You only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love to this time together, and let us worship. Some words from John Mills Poe. All too often, we place the geometries of our walled gardens, and we pace the geometries of our walled gardens, believing we are traversing the whole of creation. With spirits of discovery, let us uncover the mysteries nested in our routines. With the eagerness of children, let us seek out the secrets unfolding in our peripheral vision. Let us behold each fellow creature with reverence. Let us greet each day with praise and thanksgiving. For life is a gift of incomprehensible magnitude. Our lives are voyages with unknowable destinations. Along the way, let us meet, kiss, challenge, and support one another. Let us fashion a network of mutuality and extend it into the larger world. In these ways, we forge lives of goodness and beauty. In these ways, we know the life of prayer. Amen. The first reading that I'd like to share with you this morning is taken from an article on a blog by a chap called Brent Christian Michael. And it's called Walking in Another Man's Moccasins. There was a plaque in my church where I attended as a child. It was an Algonquin Native American prayer. It read, O Great Spirit, grant that I may not judge my neighbor before I have walked for a day in his moccasins. This gave reason for me to ponder about the relationship between the Algonquin man who spoke this prayer and his neighbor. The two men must have had similar lives. They were of the same tribe and probably shared distant relatives. They probably fought the same competing tribes for land against their common enemies. Yet the author of the prayer asked for the restraint not to judge someone very similar to him without knowing even more about the other. This prayer reflects an intuition the Algonquin Native American had about himself and his neighbor. Judging oneself and one's neighbour has its risks. One is at risk of overestimating oneself for positive attributes and underestimating oneself for negative attributes. Conversely, one is also at risk for overestimating their neighbour's negative attitudes and underestimating their neighbour's positive attributes. This might have come intuitively for an Algonquin man who had lived enough years to make this observation. Theoretical understanding of common events is not necessary to observe the relationship between one event and another. After all, it was the Algonquins that observed that drinking boiled willow bark tea, reduced mild pain, fever, and mild swelling. Later, Joseph Bayer would identify the willow bark as containing salicylic acid, commonly known as aspirin. The Algonquin and Joseph Bayer observed the same phenomenon concerning the willow bark, but had a different cultural perspective on their observations. Similarly, the Algonquin asked his Great Spirit to grant him that he not judge until he had been in another's moccasins. Today's social psychologist describes the same situation, but has a different cultural perspective. Both the Native American Indian and the social psychologist are describing similar, if not identical, paradigms. Social psychologists know that individuals emphasize situational attributions in evaluation of their own actions, while emphasizing fundamental attributions in the actions of others. Situational attribution is the tendency for individuals to evaluate their unpleasant social behaviours to situational causes. However, when they evaluate the unpleasant social behaviours of others, they attribute it to a fundamental flaw in character, fundamental attribution error. The Algonquin's cultural perspective shared the appreciation that things would be viewed differently from another's moccasins. As both the Native American and the psychologist observe their own failings, they are inclined to blame the situational circumstances. Neither is inclined to blame their basic personality flaws for momentary inconsiderate behaviour. But as human beings, both are inclined to perceive the same failings in others as caused by fundamental character flaws. Cultural perspectives are a significant factor in how human beings express their similar observations. In more universal terms, the two are expressing similar observations in two dissimilar manners. And basically, that's a long way of saying that if I do something wrong, it's just a momentary mistake. If you do something wrong, it's because you're innately evil. The second reading I'd like to share with you this morning is taken from the Christian scriptures, from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15 and verse 21. Now, I know it's not Christmas, which is about the only time we ever usually read from the Bible, but I'll explain later why I've chosen this reading. And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon." But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, "Send her away, for she's crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." And he answered, "It is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." She said, "Well, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered her, "O woman, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire." And her daughter was healed instantly. Some words from Matthew's Gospel. The great Scottish poet Robert Burns, in one of his poems, asks for the gift to see ourselves as others see us. That can be quite a scary thought. The first time I saw myself on a television recording, it was a training course, not the BBC, I was shocked that my delusion of being a slim 25-year-old was shattered. When I mentioned this to a friend, he said, "Oh, don't worry, we've seen you as you really are for years. We're quite used to it." A gentle reminder, perhaps, that our friends often accept us as we are more readily than we accept ourselves. Yes, seeing myself as others see me can be a challenge, but it can be equally challenging and helpful to see the world as others see it. Recently, over a six-week period, I did a three-day workshop on the Enneagram, a useful psychological tool that reminds us that we all experience the world in different ways and that we all react to our experiences in different ways. I was particularly struck on the final day to learn about the subtypes. That is, that within each of the nine groups or ways of seeing the world, there are three subgroups. So even people who apparently see the world from my viewpoint can react to it in a different way. These subgroups are the self-preservers, those people who major on safety and security, the kind of people you can drop in on at any time knowing that their cupboard will be full and they'll give you a meal. I'm not one of those. When one of my friends came to visit recently, he stopped off at Tesco's on the way just to make sure there was something in the cupboard. The second group are those who work well in teams or groups. Well, after 17 years in a religious community, I discovered, actually, I'm not one of those either. I'm a bit of a slow learner. The third group are those people who work best on a one-to-one basis. And that's me. I was glad of that because that was the last one there was. But what I found particularly revealing was that in discussing various situations with different groups, we all found it difficult to appreciate why other people would react as they did. Each group thought that their way of dealing with things was the obvious and right way. We all thought initially that our perspective on life was the only perspective. It was quite interesting in this group that there were at least three couples who were taking part. And I remember one of them saying, "Oh, that's why she does it that way." And another wife who said the same about him. For me, the joy of the workshop was not finding out my type and then using it as an excuse for the way I see the world, but in realizing that my way was only one way, and that I needed to learn to see the viewpoint of others as well as share my viewpoint with them. No perspective is better than another. All are needed if we are to look at an issue or a problem from every angle. In our reading from Brent Michael, we heard the Native American prayer, "O Great Spirit, grant that I may not judge my neighbor before I have walked for a day in his moccasins." Two things struck me about that prayer. First, I realized that if I am to walk in another's shoes, I first need to take off my own shoes. It's no good trying to see his viewpoint through the prism of my own. I need to step out of my comfort zone, my comfortable slippers, into his. Secondly, I need to walk for a day in his shoes, not for 5 minutes or a couple of hours. I need to see the whole of what life throws at her. You may have wondered why I chose the second reading from Matthew's Gospel. We all have our own viewpoints on the Gospels that can filter the message. But this is one of my favourite passages, not because I necessarily believe in the healing of demons, but because for me this is a wonderful example of the humanity of Jesus, in which he was challenged by a foreigner, and a foreign woman at that, to change his mind, to see the world from a different perspective. It's interesting that it is in Matthew's Gospel. When I was looking for the story, and I'm not one of those people who can quote chapter and verse of everything in the Bible, when I was looking for it, I naturally went to Luke's Gospel, where most of the women and the outsider stories are contained. Luke could be considered to be the first feminist theologian. But to my surprise, this account wasn't there. So I did what every good biblical scholar would do. I googled it. And I found it was in Matthew's Gospel. It's also in Mark's. Then it dawned on me that, of course, it needs to be in Matthew's Gospel. Matthew was writing for a Jewish audience, but a Jewish audience that was beginning to have to face the fact that non-Jews were following the message of Jesus. So here in this story, the author of Matthew's Gospel is saying, don't worry, folks, even Jesus had to be persuaded that his message was meant for everyone. Matthew is also being a little bit naughty in the way he places the story. In the previous passage, Jesus has been challenging the scribes and Pharisees by saying that in keeping the laws of the Lord, they had ignored God's Spirit. Jesus is therefore portrayed as the challenging, radical liberal. But when Jesus is challenged by the woman, the outsider, he reverts to the conservative position. When she asked for healing for her daughter, he simply ignores her. She's not in his line of vision, not part of his worldview. But he's not going to get away with it that easily, and so she keeps on asking. And Jesus says, I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then, rather rudely, says, it's not right to take the children's bread and feed it to the dogs. But the woman comes back with a touch of sarcasm. Well, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs from the master's table. Then, I believe, Jesus' eyes were opened, and he saw life from the woman's perspective, and healing took place. Matthew is reminding his readers and us that we all need to welcome the unfamiliar, to be challenged by people with views different from our own. But his positioning of the story is also a challenge to us, especially those of us who see ourselves as liberal religious people. There's a danger that we can limit our openness and inclusivity. We think that we've arrived and we don't need to be challenged anymore. I was struck by a comment that Alan Ruston from Watford made at the end of the John Raleigh Beard lecture at the General Assembly this year. The lecture was on 200 years of Unitarians being legal after the passing of what's usually referred to as the Trinity Act, when it was no longer illegal to not believe in the Trinity. Alan suggested that once Unitarians were legal, they quickly became part of the establishment and no longer wished to risk upsetting people by challenging the status quo. Though he did admit that we have recently challenged the status quo on many issues, but we do need to be aware of being too comfortable, simply walking in our own shoes. In a recent blog article by the American psychologist Mirko Thum, he gave a quote by Wayne Dyer who said, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Thum looks in this article at the times when we argue with someone about a particular position and we can't figure out why he or she didn't agree with us. It seems so obvious. Can't they see that I'm right? But Thum points out the other person is looking at the problem with her pair of glasses that filters her personal beliefs, motivations, and concepts, just as I will see the problem through my filter. I'm also reminded of the story of the two philosophers walking along a street of tenements in Glasgow. There were two women hanging out of the windows in the flats on either side of the street, having a blazing row. Just the days before Twitter. One man turns to the other and says, "Of course, they're never going to resolve their dispute." "Why is that?" says the other. "Well, it's obvious," he replies. "They're arguing from different premises." Glad to see you still awake. In the film Dead Poets Society, the inspirational and rather eccentric Mr. Keating encourages his pupils to climb up onto his desk to look at the classroom from a new perspective. If you see the bigger picture, it's often possible to get a perspective that is able to solve a problem that seemed unsolvable. Einstein is supposed to have said, "Problems cannot be solved by the same level of thinking that created them. We need to think in a different way." One of the blessings of our liberal religious community is that we are made up of people with different views, different ways of looking at the world, of different ways of addressing the issues of spirituality. One of the curses of our liberal religious community is that we are made up of people with different views, different ways of looking at the world, different ways of addressing issues of spirituality. In order to claim it as a blessing and not a curse, we need to listen to one another, to examine our own shoes, to take off our own shoes for a while, and to walk in the shoes of another, so that together, as fellow pilgrims, we can embrace one another and bring healing to our world. Amen. So go in peace, speak the truth, give thanks each day. Respect the earth and her creatures, for they are alive like you. Care for your body, it is a wondrous gift. Live simply, be of service. Be guided by your faith and not your fear. Go lightly on your path. Walk in a sacred manner. Let us go in peace. Amen.